There really is like no one size fits all for health. Honestly, it's so freeing to just throw everything you've been taught out the window. Go on your own journey and figure out like, hey, what works for me, and be curious with it, because at the end of the day, it's almost like a superpower to like know your body so well and what works and what doesn't.
Hello, and welcome back to the You're Great podcast with your host, Unique. I really appreciate you. That's where I want to start today. I really appreciate you because you are continuing to listen to these healing stories, hopefully a way to inspire your continued dedication to your health and well-being, or maybe it's to kickstart that journey and that self-reflection. A lot of us were given how to love ourselves from our parents, or a lack of love from our parents, or in rebellion. If you're me, it was like in rebellion, because I was taught that being obedient was how I could get love from my parents. And when I realized that I didn't get any more love from them when I was obedient, and I could get attention for when I was naughty, I settled for being naughty and getting attention. And so that formed a lot of the ways that I related to myself. I didn't have a standard for health. I didn't have a way of self-loving. I only had a way of self-comforting, and that was with food. They taught me to eat healthy, so I rebelled and ate sugar. And then after my illness, I really had to figure out how do I want to love myself? What is the standard? And what can I show up for with consistency? And I realized that the only thing I could really show up for with consistency was love. I fell deeply in love with my body, and nourishing myself from that place became the standard. And it is 11 years later, in remission, the standard for my self-love is consistency and nourishment. And every single day, I send these love letters to my incredible body. And I'm so thankful that I learned how to love me, because my parents didn't really set an example of self-love or care and consistency. So these are all things that I had to learn for myself and I had to examine. I love my parents and they did the best they could, and I'm thankful for that. And they gave me a lot of incredible gifts, but I had to pull apart the pieces and put them back together again for me. And that responsibility, that empowerment is everything for me. It's everything. I have a standard of how I want to feel. I have a standard of what kind of food I want to put in my body. I have a standard for movement and muscle tone and all of these things that equal unconditional love for me. And it's a beautiful thing. Haley gives us a wonderful example of her taking on her own journey. We started working together in 2021. She wasn't quite ready for it, right? And then she came back around in 2024, committed to my 12-week women's group, and created incredible results for herself. But not only that, really laid down a foundation of self-love with curiosity, with kindness, and consistency. Notice I never say perfectionism or perfect, because it's not about that. It's about showing up. It's about the lens in which you look at your health through. And it's about no excuses, because love isn't about excuses. Love is about showing up, doing the best you can with kindness, with love. I do have one last group this year starting September 13th. So if you're listening to this, you've probably got one more week to sign up. If not, I'll see you next year in the course, hopefully. And wherever you are on your healing journey, just stay with it. Keep showing up. Keep loving yourself. Keep being curious. Anyway, enjoy this healing story as much as I enjoyed supporting Haley, and I'll see you on the other side.
Haley,
I'm so excited to see you.
You look stunning.
Thank you. I'm so happy.
Yeah, your skin is glowing.
I know. It's really been like magic on the protocol.
And all your hard work paid off.
Yeah.
Like magic and your hard work.
Mm-hmm.
So how are you today? are you feeling?
I'm good. My mom and I feel much better since the Indian restaurant finally. Ew. That was horrible.
That's really concerning. I hope you left a Yelp review.
When I sent you that email, I was like, oh, Unique's going to get a good laugh out of this.
I was like, oh, the trials of eating out, you know, like I love home food so much. But then when you hear that, you're like, oh, no.
It's funny because like I've heard a mixed bag now that I've talked about it with people, because a couple of my friends are like, oh, my God, that place is so good. And then I talked to another person and she's like, oh, my God, I got so sick there. Like, I will never go back. And I'm like, ew, ugh. You couldn't pay me to go back.
But yeah. Well, yeah, because now it's just like a trauma response.
Garlic definitely, I think, helped kick it out. So,
oh, good. Yeah, yeah. Garlic is a pretty much a wonder food in my book. Whenever I feel the inklings of anything coming on cold-wise, I'll start. I mean, I eat a lot of garlic anyway. I feel bad for my family members because, you know, garlic is literally the only food that makes me fart. I don't care. I'm just like ripping it. I'm like, well, it is what it is. You know, I try to do it in places where other people aren't, but garlic is like the one food, and it's probably sulfur based why, but I eat so much of it because it's cancer fighting, fights off viruses. It's like one of those foods. It's the only thing that makes me gassy, this garlic. I've never even said that out loud. So those listening to this podcast will now know when I'm posting that I'm eating a lot of garlic that you No, I'm fluffing up a storm. So when we first spoke, it was October 2021, mm-hmm. the time 26, and you came because you were dealing with lots of canker sores that you thought at the time was related to gluten. You'd seen over 10 doctors. You were having acne breakouts, and you were also really interested in working on hormone, gut health, loose bowels at the time. You had a lot going on.
At the beginning, my acne, I look back at photos and it really wasn't that bad. But for me, you know, I always had perfect skin and the canker sores were, you know, I would have like 30 in my mouth at one time. And it was like just so painful. I went to a bunch of doctors in LA, all these different specialists, and they all were referring me to each other. No one really helped. And then I did the IIN health coaching program. And there was a woman on there that said, there's rare cases of celiac where your only symptom is canker sores. So then from there, I cut out gluten, even like the cross-contamination gluten. And I did notice that most of them had like, it pretty much cleared the canker sores. But if I like stayed up really late or got really stressed, the canker sores would kind of reappear. My skin just continued to get kind of worse and worse over the course of like 2.5-3 years. And for me, like I always had perfect skin and I modeled since I was 13. And my agents in New York used to have me talk to the girls at the agency that were struggling with their skin. And they're like, Haley, I'll tell you what to do and how to take care of it and how to eat. New for me to develop acne in my mid to late 20s. And it was something I really never thought I would deal with.
What do you think caused it? Like, what do you think caused the sudden onset of it?
I don't know if it's a coincidence, but all of this kind of started right after the first time I got COVID. And I don't know if that triggered something, or I thought, you know, I struggled with an eating disorder for 10 plus years. At the end of the day, I think it was my skin was definitely hormonal. And every dermatologist or esthetician that I went to, they're like, you know, you're not going to heal this naturally. You need Accutane, you need spironolactone, you're going to need help. And I just felt in my gut that was not the route for me. And I've seen so many stories of people that do multiple rounds of Accutane and it still comes back with a vengeance. So I knew I was going to be one of those people that it wasn't going to work for me. And I'm a firm believer in your body will heal itself if you give it half a chance and food is medicine. And when I saw your post about the 3-month group coaching, the timing was just so perfect because I was at like an all-time low. I turned full hermit. I didn't want anyone to see me. I hated the way that I looked. I hated looking in the mirror. I was crying like, almost every day. And I was really just hiding from the world because I was so insecure about my skin. And I thought that's all anyone noticed about me, which not probably true. But for me, it was like consuming.
I was like, I think a lot of people can relate to that, by the way.
Because I know, like, when I see someone, like, I don't even think, like, ew, her skin's so bad. Like, that's so gross. Like, that thought never would cross my mind. We're so tough on ourselves. But yeah, I got really tired of hiding and hating myself and not feeling good or confident. So the 3-month group coaching program was really life-changing. And having the accountability and your constant help was the best thing I've ever done for myself, ever. And it really helped me lay such a strong foundation for my health and my lifestyle. And it was the best thing I've ever done.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, it was so nice to have you in the group. And it's really hard to change the way we relate to food as a foundation for health. You can tell me if this resonates for you. But for me, food was feast or famine. It was like I was either starving myself or I was overindulging because I'd been starving myself. And to let go of that relationship to food and weight and make it more about health and wellness, for me, that was kind of the way home to a sustainable lifestyle.
Yeah, like the shift from just the focus on being skinny and being as thin as possible into shifting into, I want to be healthy. I want to have energy. I want to feel good. And it was just night and day, the shift with that.
The part you said about the skin and like being a hermit and not wanting to go out, it's interesting. Even if it sounds like you're not a superficial person, if you meet somebody, you're not looking at whether or not they have great skin, but it also sounds like you had been identified your whole life as a person with great skin. So to suddenly have that identity pulled of like, oh, I'm not a person right now with great skin. Who am I if I'm not that person?
Yeah, it was, you know, like I had my eating disorder for so long and I was never like an overly confident model. And I never really, and this is sad to say, but I never saw myself as like a really beautiful girl. Mm. And I did have my skin going for me. And then I kind of got over the eating disorder and then the skin hits and I'm like, what is this? You know, I try to find the silver lining in everything. And at the end of the day, I'm so grateful for it because it led me to you. It led me to the Bean Protocol. And at such a young age, I've gained so much knowledge about my health and my hormones and have created like a lifestyle that, you know, even if I drift off protocol a little bit, I always come back home to this like strong base that I've created. And you know, all my friends laugh at me because anyone has a problem, I'm like, oh, talk to Unique, eat some beans. Like it'll make your world like a whole better place.
We are unapologetically bean eaters here at the Bean Protocol. So, you know, people who land here, I was actually thinking about this today. I'm like, I'm going to record a landing page video that I pinned to the top that is like, welcome, you've landed in the land of beans. And if this does not resonate with you, you do not belong here. I always say it's beans and, right? I think being an omnivore makes getting nutrients really easy because, you know, you have to work really hard otherwise to get the nutrients that your body needs. But it's beans and I think a lot of people grow up thinking, oh, beans are for vegans or vegetarians. Like that's part of a healthy vegan or it's for everyone, you know, it's and the deeper I fall down the bean rabbit hole, I'm just like, how is it even possible that it's not like one of these most rejoiced foods, like for hormone health. I was just listening to this book on menopause by this neuroscientist. And she was in the book saying how women who eat a high fiber diet go into menopause 3 years later than women who don't, which again is such an incredible health benefit to our heart health, our blood sugar, our bone health. So there's a lot of reasons to love fiber. You know, it's kind of funny that we shy away from the mighty legume, but yeah, I'm happy that you're a bean person.
Oh, big time. I remember when I first came to you, I was vegan at the time too. And I tried kind of, you know, I reached a point, I felt really good at first. And then it was probably 2 years in that I don't know, I tried to fight it for a little while. And then I was like, I need animal protein. And I really didn't want to, but I feel so much better, you know, and it's so much easier too, especially when you travel and stuff, to get all of your protein in. But I was definitely not getting enough protein when I was vegan.
Okay, I have a question for you, because I know that when I went through my vegetarian or vegan stage, that it was part of my disordered eating. I don't think it is for everybody, but what was the decision for you to become vegan?
It was environmental and just love for animals and the energetic of like, well, you're consuming death and that whole rabbit hole, you know, and how they treat animals in so many situations is like, you don't want to be consuming that energy. I definitely felt good at first, and it did help me. It was kind of at the point when I was starting to recover from my eating disorder that I turned vegan, and it kind of helped me in a way. But then when I added back in animal protein, I did realize that there was a little bit of cutting out food groups that, in a way, it wasn't disordered, but it was still kind of, it went a little hand in hand there.
Mm-hmm. I grew up with a dad who had been one of the early adopters to macrobiotic living, like didn't eat, you know, animal foods, but he also had a philosophy: if somebody gave you something, you accepted it. Like it was, you know, so along his path of life, even though he was a strict macrobiotic living in, I think it was Hawaii at the time. And he and my mom were hitchhiking, which I guess one did back in those days in Hawaii. This Hawaiian family picked them up and they were in the back of the pickup. And my dad tells the story of like, they were looking at him and they hadn't eaten red meat in years. And the family decided that they looked hungry. They were very frail looking, and they stopped and got them hamburgers. And my dad's philosophy of like, if somebody gives you a gift, you receive it. So they ate it. And that was the last time they didn't eat animal protein, because they felt so full of life. And so by the time all the rest of the kids came along, he really taught us to relate to consuming animal protein as medicine. It was like the animal's giving their life for your life. And so you honor them. So it was always really this beautiful exchange versus, and it was, you know, he also really talked about eating animals that were hopefully coming from a happy environment and not these crazy mass production where they're fattened and getting it from farmers. So when possible, that was definitely the way we ate, obviously more expensive now than ever, but it was always an exchange of like, my life, you're giving me life, basically. And I see it a lot. Obviously, people can not eat animal protein. You can take iron supplements. But don't you think if we could exist on plants alone, then we shouldn't need supplements, is kind of where I think of it. It's like the fact that we need to supplement B12 and supplement iron and supplement all these things simply by cutting out an entire food group. To me, because women, we literally donate blood every month. Not men, like we lose iron every month. So if we're not actively consuming iron in some form, and heme is the most bioavailable iron. So it's always a fascinating thing to me, you know, obviously we could then fight like, well, evolution, like, of course you can take just a supplement and replace, but I never felt as good as when I was consuming animal products. So I really do see it as medicine. That's kind of where I come from now. It's like, I want the best quality. I want to support local farmers and I want to eat sustainably, but I also don't want to sacrifice myself for an ideology.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the biggest things, is to really listen to your body. And it's so easy to get caught up in just sticking to or fitting in a certain box and ignoring what your body's really telling you. And there really is like no one size fits all for health. And honestly, it's so freeing to just throw everything you've been taught out the window and just go on your own journey and figure out like, hey, what works for me? And, you know, be curious with it, because at the end of the day, it's almost like a superpower to like know your body so well and what works and what doesn't.
Oh, isn't it freeing to let go of food as an identity of like, obviously here I am at the Dean Protocol with an identity, but I'm an omnivore. What is it? What does my body need to nourish? And I invite like the people in my course, like, yes, I am here giving you this foundation, this platform from which to move forward with. But ultimately, it's like, how do we deeply nourish our bodies individually? And I feel like with a lot of these extreme diets, obviously, they can serve a purpose as a conduit for healing. It sounds like it was a conduit for healing for you in some respects on the emotional plane. And then for other people who do carnivore, like these extreme diets, I think they're conduits, but I think the promised land is ultimately not having to reside in black or white or some extreme. So much of the wisdom of life is nuanced. There's so much nuance in wisdom, and there's so much nuance in health. And to hang a shingle on an extreme feels extreme. It's like, where do we find this happy medium of supporting our individual body? And the hardest part is actually showing up to do that, right? Did you find that difficult?
You know, I was newly recovered from my eating disorder. And at the time, I did go pretty hardcore bean protocol for a month or two. And at the time, I felt like it was too restrictive. And I felt like my recovery and that kind of couldn't go hand in hand at the time. And then I just reached a point where I was like, I don't care what it takes. I just want full health. That was this January when I really tackled it. And I was like, I don't care what I have to cut out. I will do anything just to have my life back. And it was so worth it. And that's the craziest thing is like, in, as humans, I feel like we love to overcomplicate things. And I'm very guilty of loving to make a mountain out of a molehill. But it's just so simple and basic. And it's really nice to have something that just kind of is easy and very grounding. And it definitely got easier as time went on. And as you see the results, it really makes you keep going too.
I love that you brought up, like when we talked in 2021, I did get a sense that this was maybe something that wasn't going to work for you just yet. So when we kind of reconnected in 2023, it felt like you were at a rock bottom.
Mm-hmm.
You were like, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah. Well, I had exhausted like every other option. And I kind of had, you know, from being vegan, I had beans in my diet already. And after speaking with you, like my base was pretty much the bean protocol, but I allowed myself coffee or matcha or a square of dark chocolate. But I looked around and I was like, I eat cleaner than 95% of the people around me. So it can't be this cup of coffee. It can't be like this one little square of dark chocolate. It wasn't just like one thing. I think it was just like a combination of how all these things played together and, you know, a little bit of partying and staying up too late and just, you know, traveling, getting out of whack and having dark chocolate, coffee, like all the things kind of piled on top of each other, just added up to be enough. And I guess I'm a sensitive person. So yeah.
You're not alone. And it is what you're talking about is a bucket, right? So let's just say that you weren't partying, you weren't traveling, you were eating base really well, and then you had a little bit of dark chocolate. That might be fine, right? But maybe it's the, and who knows, like coffee is high in histamines, right? So is there an underlying histamine sensitivity where some of these things, especially, I don't know if partying means alcohol, but alcohol causes dysbiosis in the gut, right? Or imbalance in the gut. And that can lead to greater histamine release in the body. So is some of it histamine? It's not always easy to pinpoint the why. Some of us are more sensitive, but I do believe we belong to a club of people where that person looks like they can party until the cows come home and eat what they want and do what they want. And just, they always look fine. You're like, well, if you look fine, you're probably fine. You know, the assumption of if you look fine. And then the rest of us, it's just our bodies are like, no. And I do think in comparison, when we compare ourselves to others, it's hard to listen to what our body is saying.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, like I was never like a crazy party girl, but I did like to party on occasions and my friends and I would have a lot of fun. But it got to a point where if I stayed up too late, mouthful of canker sores and brand new breakouts. Mm-hmm. And I always got sinus infections if I stayed up too late.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, like this isn't fun. It's not worth it. It's honestly like there's so much, which we've talked about, maturing and healing and realizing that, like, you know, okay, my friends can do it. Well, I can't. And, you know, I can kind of create a different lifestyle where it honestly feels so good to wake up in the morning and feel good.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you guys are all hungover and I went to the gym, I did this, I cleaned the house, and it's so much more productive.
And I feel good. It is. I mean, and I love hearing that from you because I do think, especially in the 20s, it is hard to not just roll with what's working for everybody else. It's hard to be like, no, I'll see you for a hike, or I'll see you for something for lunch or even dinner, but not, I'm not going to sacrifice my health. So is staying up late for you the trigger for health stuff, which could be related to obviously a lot of things like blood sugar, like imbalanced sleep can cause issues with blood sugar and stuff like that. More offensive when repeatedly done versus like occasionally, obviously. Occasionally, all of us sleep like poop. But did you find that it was the combination of staying up late and having alcoholic beverages, or could you just stay up late and then feel crappy?
I was never a big drinker. Like, I could really go the rest of my life without drinking. It was never my, I don't care. Like, a glass of wine on occasion's nice. But I was kind of smoking weed consistently, and I like mushrooms too. But they're kind of fun. But yeah, it was just, it didn't really matter. Even if I was sober, if I stayed up late, it would just trigger, you know, all the things.
So yeah. Sleep is really, actually, I was just talking to this girl at the gym, and she's like, I can work out 7 days a week, but if I don't get enough sleep, I'll be sick right away.
Mm-hmm.
Like 8 hours. She's like, nothing less than 8 hours. And I was like, it's great that you know that.
Yeah, 8 hours is like my magic number too. But I think too, part of it was I really wasn't listening to my body for so long, and I was really consumed in like very high intensity workouts every single day, and not listening to my body was not an option. It was, you work out for 2.5 hours a day, and like if I'm not like red face, sweating and panting, it's not a good workout. So that was a really big shift, because, you know, even when I first spoke with you, I didn't understand like all the science behind the Beam protocol. And I don't think I knew about like the, you know, low intensity and kind of taking a break from all of that and how all of that impacts. And then when we worked together this January, I really just, you know, super restorative yoga classes, just little walks. I really cut everything back. It was like month two and a half. Everything just got really quiet and calm. And for the first time in probably 10 years, I just felt my nervous system like fully relax. And that was really, really crazy.
The first time that happened, I get the sense that you might be in a category that I put myself in, which is a high adrenaline maker naturally, can run a little anxious, affected by environment, food. Not as much anymore since I've maintained a calm nervous system, but I still remember the first time I didn't feel anxious and I didn't feel like on overdrive. I was like, this is weird. I don't like it. Quick, have some caffeine or something to make myself feel a little fucked up. What was the experience like for you when you first felt that sense of calm?
I understood, because that's when we spoke about how you have the emotional ties with food, and I didn't realize like that really was when you wanted to reach for something, or I noticed I would want to snack more or something. And nuts were my emotional tie on the protocol, because there was a point when you told me to cut them out, and it was really, really hard because those are the one thing that kind of take the edge off for me. And without that, it's like I really had to sit back and sit in with everything that was coming up.
How is that sitting in it?
It's not as bad as we think. It's like overwhelming at first, but I don't know. I've gotten used to now just feeling more calm. And, you know, it's really easy when one of the biggest things you taught me was just never abandon your health. And it's really easy when life gets stressful and you get really busy to make excuses. I found that, you know, honestly, that's when you need your health the most. And I've noticed that when I really like double down on the Beam protocol during stressful times, it like helps you get through it like so much smoother. And like you really don't get as like reactive, or it just doesn't bottle up like it used to.
I'm so glad you mentioned that. It's such an important piece that I think is so hard to do in practice, which is, okay, I'm going through a shit storm. The only thing I can control is what I put in my body. Mm-hmm. I'm going to keep showing up for my body while I move through this time in my life of where shit's going wrong or family members are sick or whatever it is. Actually doubling down on your health is not intuitive. So I'm so glad she brought it up because it's so important. It's like, what's the one thing I can do right now? Okay, I'm going to just keep showing up breakfast, lunch, dinner, you know. That's amazing that you were able to kind of sustain that.
I mean, there's definitely been times where I've gotten caught up and fell off a bit, and then I beat myself up a little bit. But each time it's like I'm getting better and better with it. And, you know, it's kind of more like a progress and perfection kind of thing. So I'm trying to get over the very all or nothing, black or white.
Yes.
It is difficult for me because it's just been so ingrained for a long time. But
well, it's part of diet culture, right? It's part of diets to lose weight or finite amount of time. You hit a weight goal, right? You hit the goal and then you kind of like, so to do something every day to show up for your health, to look at life through the lens of how can I nourish this incredible body that I have? And I really try to instill that sometimes, as you experienced for healing, going all in can be really an effective way, which is why we pulled back on the nets, because you weren't still seeing the results in your skin that you really wanted to see, right? So it was like, okay, let's just pull out back on the nets a little bit to see, you know, how your skin responds. And your skin started to respond favorably. And healing plans, I just want to say for anyone listening, are for a finite amount of time. What I recommend is as soon as possible to move into more of a longevity plan where you're maintaining the foundations of health, giving your body enough amino acids, giving your body enough fiber in the form of vegetables and beans, giving your body healthy fats, and maintaining a base and bringing back in fruit if fruit was taken out, and being able to create more balance, you know, bring in high quality dairy if that works for your body. And then noticing like, oh, how is my body maintaining my wellness on this more longevity plan approach? I really don't believe that there's any quote unquote bad foods. There's just bad relationship to foods, where foods are taking the place of emotional work, that they're becoming a placeholder instead of the work. Because any food, as long as we are maintaining our base of wellness, other things coming and going are not going to be as disruptive unless they become ritual and start replacing important nutrients.
Mm-hmm.
So where are you now these days, since you are radiant? I know one of the things you were working on when you were in the 12-week course with me was you were having these dizzy spells that had started coming on. And those also resolved themselves over the period of the course as well.
Yeah, I think, you know, right before I started, I really had no choice but to cut out coffee because it was really triggering these dizzy spells. And I think it was like the vasovagal response where I would like almost pass out. And it was, I really didn't have a choice but to cut it out. And
so your body was pretty loud about that one.
Appreciate that. And I tried to fight it for a long time. And I was like, okay, why am I doing this to myself? Like, this is really like, it's kind of scary. So that one happened all on its own. And actually it was interesting too, because the beginning of the protocol, like the first month, my skin actually got worse before it got better. And I remember I sent you pictures and it was getting like really angry and inflamed. And that's when you had me up the beans. And I really was like religious about that. And my friends would all laugh at my little pocket beans because everywhere I went, I had beans in my pocket.
Yes.
But, you know, it worked. So people laugh, but it worked. And it was around month 5 that I noticed, like, wow, I got my period and I don't have a single, nothing came out. And now it's like, my skin feels like it's back to where it used to be, where it's like smooth and there's nothing under the surface and there's nothing painful. And like now, even if I have like a late night on occasion, or if I have a coffee or something, it seems to be handling it okay.
Beautiful.
But yeah, so now I do beans with my 3 meals, and then I kind of do a couple husks throughout the day too, which I know is more healing, but as long as I still kind of have a bit of stress in my life, I think I'm going to keep it on the higher end. I'm honestly just scared to lower it.
And you know what? After 11 years on being on protocol, I still do a couple husks every day because look, I live in a city that's toxic. I'm supporting my detox pathways. I'm supporting heart health. I'm supporting, you know, and I do it for other reasons as well. I do it because I'm 48 and going into menopause where gut health, insulin resistance, all kinds of things can get wacky. So I'm just kind of like holding steady and I'm like, cool, I'm holding steady. So I think husk a couple times a day, but you're eating foundationally really strong. And it's not, for anybody listening, it's not about perfection. It's about consistency. It's making health a lifestyle for life. It, you know, and if you do that, then you also build resilience. So if you decide to have that cup of coffee or you decide to have that thing, that you're not, your body's not already in a deficit and then you're piling onto that adrenaline and sugar and depleting and all of these things that can put the body on the back foot. By showing up for your health daily and making health a daily commitment, you're building in, you're banking nutrients, right? Like you're kind of building in this support system for your body to repair damage, to have a healthy microbiome so that, and a healthy immune system. So it does create resilience. And it sounds like you're actually experiencing some of that resilience.
Yeah. And honestly, it's easier for me to stay away from sugary foods and even coffee and stuff because it is addictive. Like I know if I always had a sweet tooth and that was always my thing. Like I ate very healthy, but around sweets, like I just lost control. And it, for me, it's so much easier to just not eat them at all. One of the things that my therapist actually taught me when I was recovering was, she's like, just don't buy sweets. She's like, let them come to you. There's always going to be a birthday party. There's always going to be a dinner. And like, if you want it, have a bite. If you don't, say, I don't really care for cheesecake, I'm not going to have that. So that was kind of good advice that
I like that
put into practice for a while. I keep my cupboards very, very well planned out.
Knowing yourself is key. Like, that's really important that you know yourself. And also, I love your therapist approach of like, if it comes to you and then you're present to that moment, do I want this or do I not want this? And it's not about right or wrong or good or bad. It's just you're present to that moment. That's mature.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you like the little white tiger among your friends? You know, the golden dragon? Like, what is, how do they relate to you? Are they just like, whoa?
They're like, you're pretty weird, Haley, but... Ah.
That's how you know you're yourself, by the way.
Like, all normal is boring, so.
It's funny. It is funny. Like, we live in this world where everybody wants to be themselves and unique, but nobody wants to eat different.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, then you're weird. Like,
yeah.
Why can't that be a part of taking care of oneself? Is, you know, whatever the spectrum of care of, mm-hmm. like, not just our individual personalities, but our individual bodies as well.
Mm-hmm. When I first told everyone I was doing the Bean protocol, everyone laughed for sure. And they're like, okay, like, no one's ever really heard of this. And now, you know, they've seen my skin really do a complete transformation. And they're like, oh, wow. And I've been sending them like your podcast. And it's like the science behind it is just so crazy. I think I'm getting close to getting my parents on board with it, too.
I love when, you know, you can start radiating out that health for the people that you care about because the science is there, you know, well-balanced, high-fiber diet, obviously healing plans aside, to just making sure to get what your body needs. There is no shortcut for that. That's why I say at the end of my 12-week, it's like, contemplate what balance looks like for you. And also balance is going to change. You know, if I talk to you mid-30s, late-30s, we might be having a different conversation of what balance looks like for you then. The conversation always being, how does my body feel? How's my health? How's my immune system? How's my energy? How are my periods? Because us women, we just go through so many transitions in life. I just want to say that in your 20s, you are wiser and more connected than I. So I'm really excited for your future you, for the way you're taking care of your current you.
Thank you. And, you know, I sing your praises to everyone because you really are just like, as Lacey would, you're such an expander for me. You really just like practice what you preach and live and breathe health. And like, I look at you and I'm like, oh, I just want to be like her when I'm older.
So you're going to be awesome. You'll be awesome. You're awesome now. You'll be, yeah. I mean, slowing down the aging process is all we can do, right? We're all going to get older. I embrace that. I embrace that I'm getting older. But if I can eat well and support my slowing of aging from the inside out, why wouldn't I?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's one thing that you've said, there's nothing more restrictive than not feeling good. And that's been something that I've really reframed in my mind, because that's just, it's huge. And when you look at it from that lens, it changes everything.
I love that you brought that up. You just remember so many good little tidbits, because you weren't leaving the house. You were a hermit because mm-hmm. your skin, but you also didn't want to take in these hardcore, you know, medications, because you're right. I work with a lot of people who get off of them. And as soon as they get off of them, the imbalance remains. So mm-hmm. you actually shifted something that was out of balance in your body through nutrition, instead of having to take, you know, spironolactone or something to suppress the symptom. That is powerful. You are powerful, you know, and to recognize that you were able to dig into something that went against the grain, that nobody understood, but you kept showing up for your health and for your body. And skin is a compelling why, especially for women, you know.
Yeah.
And you can think like, oh, it's superficial, but it's not. Like, wanting to look in the mirror and see health and wellness as your face to the world, I feel like a little bit of vanity goes a long way. You know, too much and you can really mess your life up. Too little and you just don't give a damn about much. But just that right amount is actually really healthy, because it's like, oh, hey, I want to create change in my life. And yes, it's going to be uncomfortable, but I want to show up for that. And that's, there's nothing superficial about that. It's just the skin often tells the story inside, and you shifted that story inside, which is powerful and beautiful. And I don't know if you know that about yourself, but it's pretty special.
Yeah, we have a lot more control over our health than we're told. And I think that that's a big key to remember.
Yeah. Oh, so big. And what you're saying too is interesting, because there is this narrative of like, oh, there's nothing that can be done. You just need to do this. And it really is disempowering, because it takes the responsibility away from us. And I get it. A lot of people don't want the responsibility of their health. They just want somebody to tell them what to do. But to actually change the way one relates to nourishing themselves, well, first to contemplate the fact that you're nourishing, like eating isn't just a favorite pastime, it's actually how we nourish our body. We're giving it information to support us, mind, body, and hopefully supporting the mind and the body allows our soul to be free, right? To live
mm-hmm.
to our heart's desire, to relate to something that's always seems a little frivolous and fun and more about community, to actually personalize it and go, wow, this is actually how I create my best life from the inside out, is to show up for my health, is a great responsibility that's not easy to pull inside, because we have agency over what we eat. To actually pull it inside and go, I am choosing to nourish myself, and I'm choosing to interact with nourishment as a way to nourish myself. And, you know, sometimes what nourishes you is going to be a cup of coffee, but it's never going to be out of balance to your body anymore, is what I'm also hearing from you. Like, it's never going to be at, you're never going to prioritize coffee at the deficit of your body or your skin health, right?
Never. Especially as I see like family members get sick and stuff. I feel so lucky to have all this knowledge at my age, because I feel like you can prevent a lot of things that are now so common. I'm really so grateful for you and the protocol.
And I'm so grateful for you. I'm so grateful that you're willing to share your story and hopefully inspire others. Over the years, I've had the honor of working with beautiful humans in their 20s, and it inspires me, because it means that at a young age, you're going, I want to take care of this incredible body. So imagine if younger and younger we're making that choice for ourselves, what that sets our 80, 90 year old self up for. I just think that it's such a brave and beautiful thing that you have done for yourself and embrace. So what is your diet? So tell me now, like, what are the things that you've brought in that have created balance for you? Or do you feel like you've created some balance for yourself since being off the healing plan?
I have created some balance. You know, my mom was just in town and we were working a lot, and I did have a couple glasses of wine with her.
Yeah.
And I did add coffee back in, but I'm feeling like it's time to take it out. It gives me just a little bit of anxiety. And I'm like, it's just kind of, it's time for that to go. I got kind of excited and carried away with it.
Can happen with coffee. But
it's like, really, coffee's like my one and only thing that I've added back in.
Mm-hmm.
I've stayed away from sweets. And, you know, I just feel my absolute best when I'm like pretty much fully on protocol and just eating super nutrient dense meals.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have cravings. You have constant energy all day. I sleep like a baby. My periods are like nothing. And my skin's clear. And I'm like, okay, this is a good life. So
it is a good life. And, you know, actually, I want to put a little note on that, because as women, we're so used to our cravings getting the best of us every single month. To nourish ourselves properly, oftentimes those cravings, unless they're emotional, just kind of go away. Like, that's the biggest thing I've noticed 11 plus years on protocol, is that I don't have these crazy mood swings or cravings around my cycle. Mm-hmm. Because I'm giving my body, and I also consciously bump up my nutrients before a period. In that luteal phase, I'll bump up the amount of nutrients I get by a few hundred calories or more, depending on hunger. Because the body is saying, I need more nutrients. We're about to release a fair amount of blood, you know? So that's usually the time where I tend to eat more lean red meat. And I tend to kind of just bump up nutrient density during that time in response to, because otherwise the message, the body goes, hey, I need more nutrients. And we go, sugar, because sugar is a form of energy, right? So it's like, the association makes sense. But when you break it down, it's also the body just needs more nutrients. So I love that you noticed that. And I love that you're playing. Honestly, as a person with a disordered eating background, once I was healed, it took me years to really go off protocol, like strict protocol, because I was so scared. And then I started to explore. And the exploration was, how do I feel? Do I feel like myself? And caffeine, of all the drugs out there, caffeine would be my drug of choice as a high adrenaline maker. I tend to like that adrenalized feeling. And that's an addiction for me. So I tend to not, that's the one thing that I'm like, I don't feel like myself anymore, because the new me, I naturally make a lot of adrenaline, but the new me wants to feel in that space of calm, wants to be sitting in my body instead of above it, which is what caffeine does for me. But of all the drugs out there, I'd be the first one to line up for caffeine if it didn't have any effect on me. Like, give me all the caffeine, please. I eat fruit occasionally, like that's on a longevity plan. It's I like berries because they're high in nutrients. But yeah, I'm happy that you are. I think what I was trying to say is, as a person with a disordered eating background, to start to explore from a different place of how do I feel? How does this feel versus good or bad, or kind of like having these really intense, strict ideas more and mm-hmm. coming from more of a place of health.
Yeah, and removing guilt when you make certain choices.
Yes, please.
Is a big one. And I've gotten so much better, but I still, you know, can get a little hung up on that. But
I would say that's human. You know, old habits die hard. And it's being kind with that too. It's noticing the guilt come up and go, oh yeah. Yeah, I get it. You know, based on old rules, this is the feeling that I would have. And being present to that feeling too. To me, if I'm going to opt into any sugar, I'm totally present to that choice. Mm-hmm. It's just not a choice that I make.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not a mindless decision. If my family goes out for ice cream, I'll go without the intention of not getting or getting. And I'm just present, and I'll walk around and I'll look at all the ice cream, and then I'll be like, no, I don't want it. You guys enjoy. And it's not because I'm sitting there going, sugar is bad, da, 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 like having this dialogue. It's more like I'm just totally present. Like, is there anything here I actually want? Like, I don't want sugar just for sugar's sake, you know? Like old addict me, it's sugar. Roll it up. Let's add that. Like, I don't even care what form it comes in. New me is like, I'm present. Do I want that? No, I don't want that.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe I'll end my family be like, oh, this is the best ice cream you've ever had. And I'm like, all right, let me taste it. Taste it. Yeah, it just tastes really sweet to me, you know? And I think that's one of the benefits of actually not eating sugar, is that you interact with its flavors so differently when you do have it. You're just like, whoa, that is just all sugar. Like, but yeah, I think permission to explore, two things are true. for you, not having sugar sounds like a really good choice, and sugar coming to you and then being present to that choice sounds like a really good thing. And then the other thing being true, which is sugar in itself, in a relationship of a well-balanced diet, it's not a bad food. It's just unnecessary. So it also kind of removes like the good or bad title of it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Karen would say it's bad, but I'm kind of falling to the more like, I think it's just we have bad relationships with sugar, you know?
Right. Right.
More than anything. So, well, you look amazing. Sounds like you're navigating the health landscape from a really healthy place, which makes me very excited for you. Is there anything else you want anybody to know?
I don't think so. Just if, you know, if you're having any sort of health issues or, you know, especially acne, this was the only thing that truly got to the root cause and gave me like lasting results. And it's the only thing that I can like say with my chest, like this protocol will help you heal. So it's really magic and unique is amazing. And
and you're amazing.
Give it a shot.
And I'm always here, Haley. Anytime you need anything, please knock on my email, say hi, tell me how I can support you. You know, this health thing, supporting each other, staying on the health journey is why I love this community so much, because we're all human and need reminders like, hey, showing up for our body is really important. And if that's the only thing you can do at times because of stress, do that.
Mm-hmm.
Show up for that amazing body. Well, I hope you have a wonderful day. And thank you so much for coming in and sharing your journey.
Me too. Thank you so much. You're the best.
Thank you so much for joining me today and listening. You've got this 1 week left to sign up for my 12-week course on September 13th. Week zero will be open. And for those in my course, I am offering a 15-minute call anytime before or during the course to talk privately, dial in your protocol as needed. And don't forget, in week seven, I have my mentor, Karen Hurd, coming in to drop truth bombs, answer questions, and just basically be a badass. If you know my story, you know Karen Hurd played an integral part of my healing, and I am forever grateful and happy that I get to work with this incredible life-changing protocol. Have a wonderful day, wherever you are in this beautiful world.